Hey, I'm Jared Hunter.
And this is Sean Ahern.
And this is 43rd in Woodland, where non-experts bring you expert advice for your personal and professional development.
On today's episode, we sit down with David Ford, who is the Vice President, Community and Government Affairs at the University of Sciences, which encompasses driving the strategic plan to increase the outreach, relevance, and impact of the university with the West Philadelphia community. And we're so excited to have him. Welcome, David.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's a real pleasure to join you guys today.
Yeah, of course. Before we get into everything that you do at the university, it'd be great if you can just take a step back and share your background and how you started.
Sure. I'll start back in college days. I was a political science major. And what I knew that I wanted to do was make an influence on people's lives, a positive influence, obviously. And as has often been the case, that probably almost every college graduate can say that the job market was awful when I came out. And I noticed in Congress that there were a lot of elected officials that had law degrees. So I decided to go to law school because I knew that if I wanted to have a positive influence on people's lives, I wanted to do that somewhere in the political and policy sphere. Went to law school and then immediately started came back to Philadelphia. I went to George Washington undergrad and Widener Harrisburg for law school. And then came back to Philly and began working on campaigns, the first of which was for a fantastic woman by the name of Happy Fernandez. It's the best name ever in politics. Yeah. She was an at-large councilwoman. She gave me my start. I learned how to do elections a little bit, how that worked in Philadelphia, and that's a whole other story. She eventually hired me. I did campaign work for her, and then I eventually started working for her as a legislative aide. In the interim, I worked for AmeriCorps. I was a program director for an agency here called the Energy Coordinating Agency. I had about 25 men and women who would go around and do weatherizing in homes, low-income homes, as well as do budget counseling so people could figure out how to pay their bills and things along those lines, which was another great experience of working with those folks and, again, making a difference. But then I went back to my passion, started working in city council with Councilwoman Fernandez. I really kind of learned how you pass laws in the city and what you need to do to pass them. And I won't bore your audience with all the things that is, but it's very intricate. The Happy went on to, she made the career decision to resign to run for mayor. And I started working on other campaigns and then eventually got joined up with another council person who was a brand new freshman in the year 2000. Her name was Blondell Reynolds Brown. And I worked with her for 14 and a half years. I always say, don't forget the half year. It was something that I was really passionate about. And, you know, one of the things that I did to keep things interesting was consistently work with staff, not only on our own team, but on other people's teams, and developed a deep network and, I guess, a reputation for the guy who helps the new people when they come into council. And I really enjoyed nurturing the younger staffers. So, and when I left Blondell, the last 7 years I had worked with her as her chief of staff. Prior to that, I had been doing legislative work as well. You know, I knew that that what I was doing was really creating my whole purpose for being there was no longer like to pass laws, but was to really help nurture people in their careers. Yeah. And you know, as difficult as it was for me to leave, there was just an all-star team that we had assembled in the councilman's office that I finally felt like, you know what, I can go off and do something else and kind of expand my brain a little bit. So if you stay anywhere for 14 and a half years, yeah, some things are going to get a little stale. Yes, you are making a difference, but like if you really want to do, you know, your brain needs to do other things sometimes. I worked briefly for a startup. It was a creative startup where we built out campaigns, not really for politicians, but to influence politicians and thought leaders to try to get some things done in the civic space. But ultimately, I came back to doing what my skill set, what I really always wanted to do from the start, was help an entity, you know, was the city or was council people, but then it was now a university, do what it can do within its sphere to help the neighborhood around it, or hopefully the whole, you know, in some ways the whole city. But I really wanted to make sure that we were concentrating on our own neighborhood. That was a really attractive thing to me. I was recruited to do community and government affairs. Actually, to be completely honest, I was hired to do government and community affairs. And I asked on the first day if I could change the title and put community first, because I wanted to be able to tell the story that is, I think it's more than just it's more than just symbolism. I wanted people to know that the idea now is that we are putting community first. And, you know, let's be honest, government doesn't care if they're first in that sentence. But community folks, they do care about that. If you explain to them why it was named that. I haven't actually told that story in a while, but that was that was my long path to the University of the Sciences. And I've now been there for a little over 5 years. And it's been really great. That's been a wonderful experience over the course of the last 5 years.
Yeah, I could take that in so many different directions. I think that there's so much to eat up with that question. One of the things that I'm kind of interested in first to tackle is you mentioned this idea of knowing exactly when to step back from your position with city council. And I'm just kind of interested in wondering, you know, what exactly about the staff or yourself did you feel like gave you the okay, right? Like, at what point did you feel like, all right, I think everybody on my staff kind of understands what they're doing. This feels like the right time to step back or to transition and to go into the next thing. Like, what about that working environment? Did you feel like, all right, now's the time for me to get ready for that next step?
Well, I think, you know, as a chief of staff, there tends to be a lot of handholding, especially in the beginning, where, you know, folks just don't know exactly what they are yet. Generally staff people who work in city council, well, I don't want to be too generalistic because there's plenty of folks who are older that work there too, but people that are starting off tend to be on the younger side, you know, mid to late 20s. And, you know, being at the start of their career, there is a feeling of, I'm not exactly sure what to do. I would always put myself back to when I started in city council in my mid-20s and was like, I remember what an odd place it was for starters, but really like how much there was to learn. And what I recognized in myself, and I know I'll get back to what I recognize in others, but I always try to put myself in the shoes of others, sure, is remembering in the beginning how things were. After a year, I was just kind of getting a grasp of what to do. After 2 years, it's like, oh, you know what? I think I got this. And by 3 years, it was like, I know exactly what, if I saw a room of people, I could say, I know what that council person is saying to that person. And I know what that means for a vote. And you could tell all these things. So I wanted to see if the staff people I was working with were able to kind of pick up those same things. And there'd be less handholding. So when they would report to me, it was more, a little less of me having to guide and a little more of me just saying like, hey, that sounds great. You really got this. Mm-hmm. And we had an amazing, you know, the team that I had was, they just, you could tell that the light bulb had gone off in those folks. Mm-hmm. and they were excelling, and people were recognizing the work of the office. And of course, everyone recognizes the council person, like, hey, you do a great job of this. Mm-hmm. Or, hey, wow, how did you get all those followers on Facebook or Twitter? And it's like, well, she did, but she really, it was Jason. Right. Or how did you get that? You know, how did you get that passed? Well, councilwoman did it, but it was under her authority that Catherine was able to get the people to come together. Mm-hmm. So it was, I don't know if I got you 100% there, Jared, but I think it was basically just seeing how, just seeing the growth, watching the growth, mm-hmm. And seeing how people were able to flip that switch from new person to, you know, it's like, just like in college, you know, you're a freshman, you don't really know what's going on, but by junior year, you kind of got a good idea of how to work that system. So it's kind of the same kind of growth period.
Yeah, that's really interesting to hear, especially like you said, you had 14 and won't make sure I forget that half, 14 and a half years in being chief of staff. And so what I'm really interested in is why did you decide to pursue the university route, especially when all the cards were stacked against you to continue into the public affairs, government policy, or even run for mayor? So what made you make that transition at the end of the day?
Well, I did something that went against the advice that I give to everybody. When I left, when people are thinking about changing jobs, I always say, well, don't leave your job until you have something lined up. When I left, I was just like, I'm jumping and let's see where I land. I hope the parachute works. One of the things, and Sean, one of the things I had thought about was, do I want to run for office? It's something that I played around with for a while. And I thought I had the right experience and temperament to be an effective legislator, and eventually something more than that, perhaps. But, I think the game of politics is it's an interesting one behind the scenes. You know, it is one of those, the sausage being made is not the prettiest. And it's not something that I necessarily shied away from. I chose not to run mostly because I wanted just to try to see what else was out there in the world. Yeah, I knew I could take that next step potentially. There's no guarantees that anybody would have cast a vote for me, but I was confident in my ability that I could at least run a very competitive campaign, if not a winning one. Though I do think I probably could have won. But it was really about changing that mindset, changing that. You know, it's time. You know, when you work in government, it's very bureaucratic. It's very process driven. And I wanted to just do something completely different. And jumping into an entrepreneurial space was really the flip of government. It is all structure in government, and entrepreneurial space, you're just like, it's like, I it was really different for me. And it was a complete rewiring of my brain. And I liked that. It was really, really great. Did that get to the crux of your question, Sean?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely answered a lot more than that. So thank you.
Yeah, for sure. One of the things I'm definitely interested in is if I could maybe pull you back into the city council discussion first for a second. One of the things we were talking about before we started recording was, I'd assume in this position for as long as you were in your council position dealing with politics, and like you said, after 3 years or so, you could point to people and understand who was making what moves. I'm interested in, has that strategic thinking kind of pulled into other careers at all? How you use that as you've moved forward in your career and kind of kept it fresh in your mind? Have you seen that as a benefit moving further in your career as a skill that you want to try and keep sharp?
Well, think about it. In the example that I could look across the room. So when you're looking across the room, you're not hearing a word that's being said. So the skill that I think that I developed in that point of time, I'm a good listener by nature. So I can hear a lot of things and figure out where things are going from what I hear. But when you hit the point where you've soaked all that in, and that tells you what's going on across the room. So you have this basic knowledge of everything that you've listened to, and that gives you the lay of the land. And then when you see, like, relate, you know, people's relationships, and it's very observational. It's very, what, you know, how is that person talking across the room? Are they animated? Are they angry? Are they upset? Are they happy? Is it just a whisper? What is going on? And you can pretty much figure those things out. There's a lot to figure that you can figure out just from body language. And that is kind of, I think that would be, that's what I would call the skill from being able to see folks from across the room is just the nonverbal. And I think I've seen that a lot in terms of work that I've done and being able to figure out things just by, you know, it's you can look at someone's face and you can know where they're at without them having saying a word. And that might sound obvious, but there's a fair amount of people that don't pick that up, and they keep trying to push things forward without acknowledging the fact that they're already at a deficit And right. you've got to kind of pivot and do something else.
No, I think that's super important. And honestly, that's part of the reason that we do this podcast is sometimes people think they know or they have a general sense. But when you hear it from someone who's got as much as experience as you have, clearly explaining it the way that you explain it, it's nice to have those little nuggets of wisdom, you know, and saying whatever I'm doing in my career is, you know, kind of good piece of information to keep in the back of my head. And getting off on a tangent a little bit, I couldn't help myself, but you mentioned this kind of intentional switch in the name or the title that you have from government and community affairs to community and government affairs. Can you talk a little bit about what that importance is with connecting to the larger West Philly community in this context, you know, talking a little bit about making sure the university is kind of a good neighbor with the surrounding community in West Philadelphia?
Well, you know, let's start with I'll start with a very simple concept in that we live in a neighborhood, and that means we are a part of a neighborhood. Now, you could be the neighbor that makes a lot of noise. You could be the neighbor that makes smells. You can be the, you know, and things of that nature. And that's one kind of neighbor. But do you want to be thought of as that kind of neighbor? Or do you want to be thought of as the neighbor who is talking about the issues that are going on in the neighborhood and working collaboratively to fix them? And not, you know, it's not even necessarily problems that we start or have anything to do with, but we're a neighbor. So let's be a part of the collective neighborhood to figure out what needs to, you know, what needs to change and what and how we can be helpful in that. So it really all starts there. But universities do things for different reasons. You know, lots of people have folks in my position and they're not able to do it quite like I do it because the size of our institution is such where I can go and sit on the porch of Black Captain Mrs. Fletcher and have, you know, a conversation about what's happening. Like, I can do that. Other folks, and we don't necessarily have a track record of being a you know, a big bad, you know, buying up all the land and mowing stuff down like other schools may have. So it's one of those things where you want to be part of solutions. Other folks will have community and government affairs folks there just to like try to build new buildings or figure out how to get more grant money. And that's part of what I do too, if needed. And I'm happy to do that too, but I come at it now with a track record of working here for 5 years that if I'm asking for something, because generally I'm not asking for anything. Generally, I'm just saying, how can we help? So if I have an issue now, 5 years in, I go, okay, well, we would like to try to do this. Can we work together on this? You're much more likely to get a positive response because you have a track record of being the good neighbor, as opposed to just someone coming in and saying, okay, this is what we want. You know, what do you guys want out of this? You know, can we figure out something? Like, it's going to be a little better. It's going to be a little more of a conversation because there's a trust that's been developed with our immediate neighbors and neighborhood organizations where I just, you know, I don't just come when something is needed. You know, I always say, it's, you know, before I come out and put my hand out like this, which to your audience, I'm putting my hand out like I'm asking for money. I like to flip it around in a handshake and just make sure people know who we are and provide a face for an institution, which sometimes is not easy to do, but that's where I'm coming at.
Yeah. It's great how you bring that up. And especially something that came to mind is that self-awareness, that presence you have to have of understanding the room. I think about emotional intelligence, and it's really ideal in your job and everything that you do in your career. But something that I wanted to go back to again, from changing from being the chief of staff to now going to a university setting, is again, following that passion that has been driving you ever since you started your career. And so I guess I have a question in regards to, how do you continue to keep that passion in the job that you do every single day? And again, going back and saying that you're now that big fish in the pond of that ecosystem, and how do you kind of play nice with everyone else in the ecosystem when you're kind of the big fish, if we wanted to say it that way?
Well, you know, I'll go with part two first. It was passion and like, how do I do it? So the how do I do it part is it's okay being the fish in the pond because I've been a nice fish for so long that people generally want to be nice to my fish. I'm a pretty friendly fish. I'm trying to think of some analogy with some childhood book I read for my son way back when, but that's not hard to do if you're consistently presenting yourself in an honest and open way, emphasis on honest, and working with people. People get that feel from you. The one thing I will always say to anybody that I'm working with in that regard, any neighbor who asks something, if I can promise it, like I know I can do it, you know, I will promise it and I will keep that promise. I will make it happen. Oftentimes I will say, look, because I work for an institution, there's T's that need to be crossed up, people that need to be checked in with, and it might not work out. Mm-hmm. So the other thing I will always say is, here's what I can promise. I can promise you I will try and work with you and talk with you every step of the way so that you know what's going on. And that goes a long way in creating the nice fish scenario. Mm-hmm. Just being open and honest, and especially with what you can and can't do. So that's that piece. As far as keeping the passion, well, there's a lot that needs to happen for some of our immediate neighbors. There's a lot of, and very close to our university, there is some very low income census tracts, very low income. And so those problems aren't, they haven't disappeared in 5 years. I didn't come in and wave a magic wand, and I'm never going to be able to, the university's never going to be able to fix all the problems. So it's, there's a long list of things that need to be worked on, and it's figuring out how to do that. You know, whether or not it's like, for example, there's a community organization that's trying to restart itself. So that has some really large ramifications for our neighborhood. And I'm passionate about helping them figure that out so that they can be a resource for the neighborhood and also a resource for the university. Maybe there's things that we can go after together and like for grants that you need a good community partner on. So I'm excited about that, but it doesn't have to, even absent that, there are lots of other organizations that I'm working with in this neighborhood and outside the neighborhood with individuals, with block captains. And it's just, if it's in you to work with people and to help improve lives, if you have a passion for this city, which I do, it's easy for me to kind of keep that going. Yeah, there's always always probably somebody out there that's going to try to bring you down, but that's okay, because there's a lot more other people that are going to try to work with you and lift things up. So that for me is a way to keep my passion going. That flame hasn't gone out yet. I don't think it will for some time.
Yeah, I think it was great how you shared that. And I don't know what we shared with you before, but we actually rebranded and have a new slogan for the podcast called Non-Experts Bringing Expert Advice. Us being the non-experts, you being the expert. And really what I'm thinking about here is the expert of that passion that you continue to bring every single day from the beginning of your career and now to what you do in your job at the university is just very refreshing to hear and just that aha moment. But now getting back onto script, I think this is a perfect segue to also, if you want to spotlight, advertise, or shout out any other organizations you're a part of outside of the university.
Outside of the university. Well, that's a good segue for me to advertise a relatively new organization, which I recently took over as the board chair, called Better Civics. And Better Civics is about helping people become civically engaged, not just on an election day, but year round. And whether it's there is some stuff that deals with voting, but it's also about jury duty, and then trying to push forward ideas. I'll use jury duty as an example. Like, hey, how do we get jury duty, like where we get people actually interested in doing it? People have been getting paid $9 a day since 1950 something, but if you did the cost of living adjustments, right, people should be getting around 80 some dollars a day for that. I'd be much more interested in $80 a day. Yeah. And it makes a lot of sense. Just trying to figure out ways that people can get can be a shining example for their community and having a sense of feeling of like, I love, for example, Philadelphia, and I want it to be the best place it can be. So yeah, you want to vote the right people in. That's a part of it. Part of it's jury duty. But the other part, like the organization is now looking like, how can we help block captains? What can we do? Can we do trainings for block captains? And we're looking at things along those lines. So there's a very energetic executive director who is the co-founder named Jen DeVore, who is working on this. And I'm so excited to be supportive of her work. I'm involved in a number of boards in University City due to the position I hold at the university, UC Green, which is planting trees throughout University City. Friends of Clark Park, I'm actively involved in. Also, the University City District, which is an entity that does street cleaning, but also helps like small businesses with promotion. And does just fun stuff like movies in Clark Park, or something called the Baltimore Avenue Dollar Stroll.
Oh, we remember that.
Yeah, everybody loves the Dollar Stroll. Yeah, I mean, definitely. A dollar, you can't beat it.
Yeah.
Those are some of the orgs that I spend some of it's during my work day. The University City orgs, but Better Civics is a new one for me. And I've been very lucky to have a list of boards that I've had the opportunity to work on over the years. But this is a good group. You have to limit yourself. You can't do too many at once, or you can't really be a good advocate if you're only doing some. Right, right, so those are some of the orgs that I'm working with currently.
Is there a social media presence for Better Civics that we can check out?
There is, and I will have to get that to you since I don't have it off the top.
That's totally fine. We'll make sure all of our listeners get connected with Better Civics.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and I actually want to retract my statement of the non-experts and the expert, because I can see the light bulbs flicking over there from Jared, and want to put a little asterisk as Jared is really an expert in this field with the community development engagement that he's doing with Woodbury. So I see the light bulbs flicking over there, so I'll hand over to Jared.
Just a little bit, not a lot, but I am biting my tongue. I will wait until the end. We'll talk. So, yeah, just generally, if you were thinking about advice that you could give to young or emerging professionals, and really any career, is there anything that you would tell them?
Well, okay. So for young professionals, my advice changes as you grow older. So for young professionals, I think it's important to find mentors that can help guide you through the process so that you're not alone. Folks that you can trust, I think that really can help in your professional growth. If you don't have one, get involved in organizations that do that kind of work. There's a group called Leadership Philadelphia, they have a great mentorship program. The Chamber of Commerce has one for those working in Philadelphia, or actually the Chamber of Commerce is regional. So there's, even if you're working out in the suburbs, you can take advantage of some of their mentorship. If your company is a part of the Chamber of Commerce, I would highly recommend young people look at that to get that mentorship. Don't take shortcuts. You don't really win with a shortcut. You know, I think the success that I've been able to achieve is I took the time to learn and took a deep learning dive into, I'll use city government as examples, since that's where I was a young professional. You know, I got to learn the in and outs of like the city's budget and going to these budget hearings. And most people didn't go to all the budget hearings. I went to every single budget hearing. Because some of them are like really dry. And some of them you don't really, but I had to write questions from my council person to ask folks. And luckily I had two council women who I worked with who were really wanted to get into the questions. But you can only ask the questions by really going deep into it, looking at the numbers, figuring it out, like, hey, wait, you said this here, but now it says, you know, I would go back like a year or two, like, hey, 2 years ago, you said this. Well, not everybody was looking at 2 years ago, right?
They're
just kind of moving on and, okay, this is what they're saying now and this is what's going to happen. I would make the effort to like, all right, but wait a second, you said this. And so you know, it's really, it's putting, it's work. It is hard work. But if you put in your hard work in your youth, you will reap those benefits later on in life, because you're going to have a base of knowledge and a level of respect from folks where they're going to give you a lot of deference in what you do. And it's earned deference. It's because you know your stuff and you're not just winging it. So that would be a couple of things that I would say. You know, no shortcuts, get a good mentor.
Well, I suppose we could indulge for a second, but I'll try to keep it as focused as possible, because our last question is, what's the most important thing for you to remember as you're doing your work every day? So I obviously do a lot of community organizing work here in Woodbury, but I also do community engagement consulting all across New Jersey. And a lot of different pieces of advice pop up. And, you know, it's dependent on what community you're working with or what issue or topic you're discussing. But if you could kind of generalize it to say, what's one of the most important things you remember as you're out in the community doing civic engagement work, anything, you know, in between? I would obviously love to hear the civic engagement stuff, but anything you want to share?
I think it's a, for me, it's a pretty simple answer. And the answer is, it's not about me. It's not about me. It's not about you. It's not, it is about a collective good. And I never have been one that likes to take credit, and that may be to my detriment to some degree. But at the end of the day, you have to remember, it's not about you. It's not about your career, really. It's about the work. If you're really being truthful and honest about what you're doing and really trying to make a difference, it is about it's about the work. And that might mean you taking a step back and making sure that you're giving other people accolades, because generally you're not doing this by yourself. Quite frankly, very little of what I do is done by myself. I might be a good conduit and a good connector. That's generally how I think of myself, as a connector. But if I am putting if I'm working with a high school, Paul Robeson High School for Human Services, and am I creating this program where pharmacy faculty and students and PT students and OT students are going in and working with these kids? Not really. I'm not the expert on that. But I've built a relationship with the principal, and they know, you know, I go on these tours and I listen to what does the principal want, or any other organization for that point. And it's always about, it's not what I think is best. What does the principal think is best? What's best, you know, and who can do this? Well, it's the students that can do it. It's the faculty members that can do it. It's a collective thing. So it's, you know, I don't ever say, I have put together this program at Paul Robeson High School where our farm. No, we did. And here's who was really important in putting that together. So just always remember, it's not about you. You got to give other people the flowers, because if you don't, people aren't going to want to do things with you, because you're stealing all the spotlight. So make sure you're working with others collectively. Remember that it's not you. It is we. It's not a me thing. It's a we thing. That's what Councilman Reynolds Brown used to always tell me. And I've soaked that one in.
I like it. Yeah, I think that's definitely the perfect way to end this episode. And I hope our listeners are picking up some of this wisdom and knowledge, information that you shared. I'm very excited about the stuff that we've got out of this episode.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. We'll definitely make sure we give a shout out to Better Civics. And again, David, thank you so much.